I don't think we've met before, but I'm the referee on this field.
If you're working as an accountant and you lose your job, nobody really notices.
Leinster could offer me $5 million a year, I wouldn't go.
It is Tommy Moe!
Rugby, rugby, weekly.
Little reverse pass. Oh!
Good morning, the 42 members, and welcome to the 42 Rugby Weekly Extra. The WhatsApp group is abuzz with optimism after yesterday's podcast between Murray Kinsella, Owen Toolan and Ryan Bailey. Ryan put me under serious pressure with that intro, by the way. Who uses the word indelible in an intro? Like, I'm absolutely battling here. Hopefully Thursday, if I'm sitting in, I'll script some prose. But we've got Murray on the line again. You've been at the press conferences for both the All Blacks and Ireland this afternoon, your time, Murray. What was the vibe and the general buzz over there?
Yeah, so started off at the All Blacks. They're in the kind of more in the heart of Tokyo. Ian Foster, the assistant coach, was up. He was actually quite cranky. Didn't really answer the first few questions. It was a bit snappy and short and warmed up a little bit eventually. And they had a couple of players up as well. And yeah, there's a little bit of a vibe off them being a little bit wary of Ireland. They seem at pains to highlight the fact in their eyes that the last couple of wins for Ireland two in the three most recent games aren't really applicable to this. It's a World Cup quarterfinal and it's very different. There is obviously an element of truth in that, but they seem a little bit quick to me to try and cut off that line of questioning. Out to Ireland then afterwards, they're out in, as you mentioned yesterday on the podcast, they're staying basically in Disneyland. They're in the Hilton Tokyo Bay, which is right alongside the theme park. So they have a day off tomorrow. I imagine a lot of the players will be in there having a bit of fun. But there's a really confident vibe off Ireland. They've spoken so well the last couple of days about what's ahead of them, about how they've grown, about how they feel they're in a good place to negate and maybe even exploit a couple of the All Blacks' weaknesses. They feel quietly confident and definitely getting a really good vibe off them. Obviously, that could have no reflection at all in the game, but certainly Ireland are talking very well about how they've come on under Joe Schmidt, how they've been able to reel in the All Blacks, whereas previously Ireland really weren't in that picture at all. Under Joe Schmidt, they've really had had an edge in recent times over the All Blacks. So yeah, really interesting week shaping up, and it's only going to get more fun as we go.
Yeah, do you think that confidence is, it? I presume it's legitimate based on what you're saying there, not necessarily just sort of brave facing it or fronting up for the media. Like, do you feel as though maybe they feel themselves that they got a monkey off their back or turned a corner with that Samoa win, with the performance that basically resembled something like them at their best 12 months or so ago?
Yeah, that's definitely part of it. And even you mentioned a monkey off the back. Johnny Sexton mentioned that in terms of the All Blacks as well. They feel that there's no mental inferiority complex there now anymore. And even Johnny Sexton talking about, it was really interesting, I thought yesterday, he was talking about how different it was from the end of the pool in 2015 when that French match, they obviously put so much into it physically, lost a lot of guys through injury, but also emotionally, the amount they put into that game. Everyone kind of remembers Ian Madigan's tears, but the rest of the players obviously were celebrating pretty wildly. And he mentioned that there was a bit of a come down for the quarterfinal against Argentina, which is a crazy thing for him to, I guess, feel in hindsight. He obviously wasn't involved in that game and he's excited about starting his first World Cup quarterfinal, which again seems crazy for him at the age of 34. But I thought it was really honest out of him. He just feels that everything is shaping up better for them in this World Cup. Obviously, they had the setback of losing to Japan. Ireland feel that all of us overreacted to what we felt was an underperformance against Russia. They all felt it was a pretty decent showing given the conditions, etc. So all in all, they feel they're well set, and particularly in this fixture, they feel they're in a good place to go and limit what the All Blacks do, as they've done a couple of times now, and also maybe exploit a couple of things which they've done in the past with the likes of the Stockdale try last time. So yeah, it is kind of, if you're looking at it from an Irish point of view, it's heartening to hear how they're speaking and hear also how it sounds like the fact that behind the scenes they're shaping up nicely for this.
Yeah, you mentioned the emotionality and the come down from that France game 4 years ago. How much do you think they will have to muster something similar in order to get over the line here? Or has this group come along enough in the 4 years that they can be a little bit more calculated and almost robotic in how they conduct themselves in trying to dismantle the All Blacks?
Yeah, there's definitely like a large part of their modus operandi is that, as you say, robotic or being very clinical in how they go about their game plan, there's always going to be that element of emotion, though, and that's a good thing. And I think the underdog status this week definitely helps with that as well, and that little maybe bit of a chip on the shoulder. Johnny Sexton mentioned criticism from home and then being bemused at that. I think that helps as well in that emotional side of it. Our Irish teams are always going to have that edge, and I think it is a good thing that that Irish teams do have that. And Joe Schmidt himself knows that fully. When Paul O'Connell retired, he was cognizant of the fact that maybe that's the emotional leader gone. He brought Andy Farrell into the mix, a guy who delivers a lot of that around game day and around just kind of G-ing up people before games. He's excellent at doing that and putting a bit of emotion to performance. So there's always a bit of both, and definitely in a World Cup quarterfinal particularly, it's not going to be hard to get that out of players. It's not going to be hard for them to be motivated. This is everything, and the players are really highlighting that as well. It really is. It's just boding so well for a brilliant game, because the All Blacks as well, they're able to be calculated and efficient with what they do. They have such confidence in their skill set and their ability to strike when given an opportunity. So there's lots to look forward to that way.
Yeah, it's such an exciting week as well. It doesn't really get any bigger, and it feels like it's been a long time coming. Let's talk about referees, as much as you tend to not like to do that. But obviously, Nigel Owens has been appointed for Saturday's quarterfinal. He'll be assisted by France's Pascal Gauzer and our good friend Angus Gardner as well from Australia, with Graham Hughes of England, the TMO. Obviously, Nigel Owens is one of the leading refs in the game. We know that. He's had a couple of contentious calls against Ireland in tests against the All Blacks sort of semi-recently, when you think of the scrum pen in the second test down in New Zealand in 2012 and then the late penalty in the Ryan Crotty game in 2013. But, you know, it is a bit of a long time ago, and like, that is literally nitpicking, which is kind of pointless. That could happen with any referee. The only kind of real memory, apart from those that I have, of Nigel Owens being in any kind of hot water in relation to an All Blacks test was, I think it was 2016. Was it Dunedin or Eden Park? Yeah, like, do you remember the Henry Spey try that never was? I think he disallowed it for obstruction at a fairly crucial juncture in a New Zealand-Australia game. And like, Rod Kafer, the former Wallabies centre, came out and said he should never referee a game again. And even Matt Williams here was speaking on second captains around that time, and just alluded to the fact that he had essentially buckled under the pressure of refereeing an All Blacks game, as most referees tend to do, and how that was a significant problem itself within the game. Do you think that even over the course of 3 years, that sense has been eroded somewhat? Like, when you go back to the second test between Ireland and the All Blacks in 2016, I think that's when all of that suspicion began to peak, just because of how many dangerous challenges, etc., that the All Blacks essentially got away with. Do you think it's kind of leveled out now, and that it's not so much a concern really when it comes to officiating in an All Blacks test?
Yeah, that's been a really interesting narrative over here as well. You probably remember Razzy Erasmus and the Box really getting stuck into that before the first game of their pool in Pool B. They were trying to highlight the fact that in the past, the All Blacks, in their perception, certainly had got those decisions. I personally feel that has balanced out a little bit. But then you look at that match against South Africa, and there were little bits and pieces that you could pick out and say, you know, they slightly got away with this. I think you can do that with any game, like, even not to rain on Japan's parade, but as Owen mentioned, there was a lot of side entry from them in their game, etc. And you can always look back at it with a critical eye and balance it one way in your analysis. I think it personally has leveled out, and I think it does generally tend to level out. If you're at home, obviously, it's a proven fact that you're going to get more refereeing decisions. That's there's been several studies done on that and proven the case, not specifically to rugby, but in sport. And I don't, yeah, you think of those big decisions against Ireland, the 2013 one where McGrath went off his feet and the All Blacks go down at the other end and score an outstanding try. And that's probably a lesson in the fact that you want to be the ones ahead in the end game, because Nigel Owens does tend to make maybe decisions there, and he does want to flow to the game. He doesn't want people off his feet. I've actually been having a look at the stats since they announced it. Even in this World Cup alone, 45% of Nigel Owens' penalties have been at the breakdown, the tackle ruck area. Now, that's a high number, even though that is generally the highest penalised area of the game. You look at someone like Wayne Barnes, he's down at 29% in that area. I have Nick Berry here, he's 35% in that area. And you saw a lot of them against Samoa the last day, but Nigel Owens it really out on his own with 45% of his penalties in that area and 35% of them tackler not rolling away in that within that 45%. So there's a clear like statistical proof of what exactly he wants. I think anyone who watches Nigel Owens refereeing will see that. He wants the flow to the game. He wants the attack being able to get through phases. He doesn't want negative play, and that was probably what Ireland were guilty of that time in 2013. Yes, they were on the attack essentially, but they weren't trying to attack. They were trying to run the clock down and kill off the game. He really doesn't seem to like that. I think that his personality is that he wants rugby to be played in an open fashion. Ireland are really disciplined generally at ruck time, and that'll be in their favour. The other areas of the game really aren't as much of a concern to him. Is scrum penalties just 18% there, which is again, much lower than someone like Nick Berry. He's at 30%, I think, and Wayne Barnes' stats, I can't remember off the top of my head now the scrum, but he clearly is focused on that ruck tackle area. That's the key for Ireland. And again, they do a lot of analysis on the referee. They'll know that better than anyone. They know him particularly well, and so do the Kiwis. Simon Easterby was talking about that today. So I think they'll both be pretty happy with this. He's got a strong personality, obviously, and I don't think he'll be in any way taken aback by the pressure of the game. Yeah, if he makes a big decision either way late on, of course we're going to say he was favouring this team or whatever. It could be in Ireland's favour, and they'll hope that that's the case. They'll both hope, I think, that it doesn't come down to one of his decisions or a card, as we've seen in this World Cup a lot. But there's definitely familiarity there, and I think that helps Ireland definitely.
Yeah. Do you think when Simon Easterby was talking about him being across the set piece that it was almost a message that he needs to be across the set piece? Because as you mentioned there, statistically, he's actually a little bit reticent maybe to blow the whistle, certainly with scrums.
Mm. Yeah, that's definitely one. I think they'll be like you'd always love to be privy to the pre-match meetings with the refs. I think a big one for them will be Joe Moody on the loose outside of the All Blacks scrum, a guy who a lot of teams have frustrations with his angles of a scrum maybe. And Keane Healy, it was funny, he came up for the presser afterwards and he talked about the All Blacks' clever and tactical scrummaging. And I kind of sat there for a couple of minutes and then I went back and said, what do you actually mean by that? What's that mean? And he said, maybe the angles they hit, maybe the way they engage, maybe the way they sit off you and invite you to put a bit of pressure on early. So they're definitely aware of that. And again, they'll raise it with Owens. You would hope that he does make decisions in that area if it's clear and obvious, but he certainly just wants the ball away. And I guess for the neutral and for anyone who wants an open game, that's a good thing as well. If the ball's playable, it's going to be gone from the back of the scrum and he's not going to look for that penalty.
Mm, yeah, when you said a minute ago that his personality would lend itself to wanting to see an open and free-flowing game, it leads me onto this question from Eric Fitzgerald in the WhatsApp group. And Eric was asking, do you think he inserts himself into the narrative of games?
Yeah, I suppose he does do it. Like he's got a big personality and he's not afraid to be himself and engage with players. And, you know, obviously he's quite a funny guy. And I have to say, I find some of his comments with the players pretty funny. I know people get frustrated with that at times. He's not afraid of making a big decision. And that's something that you would like referees to be able to do. I know some of them are, like we just mentioned, the scrum there, he obviously wants the ball away, but he's certainly not afraid to make that big call. And listen, if it goes in the All Blacks' favour, as I said, there's going to be absolute uproar from supporters. But for me, it always balances out, maybe not in a particular game, but generally it always balances out that refs, I don't think, have biases either way.
Yeah,
I know fans get frustrated by him sometimes, maybe lecturing players, etc. But that's his way of refereeing. He's bloody good at it, and I'd like to see a lot of people who give out about referees all the time actually trying to ref a match. It's very difficult to do, and if he brings a bit of personality to it, then so be it.
Yeah, fair enough. One last one on Owens then from Dara. He asked, now that we have Owens and the forecast is for rain, how likely is a red card for the All Blacks?
Yeah, well, it's going to be fascinating. See, like the card situation is just, it's going to be decisive in at least one of these quarterfinals, just based on the probability and based on the rate of cards. Obviously, more than ever already, without the knockouts played, that's going to be a tough decision for someone to make. I actually was surprised that Nick Berry didn't get a quarter final, because I thought he did make a big decision with Bundiaki. It would have been easy to maybe mitigate down. And obviously they've backed him now in the disciplinary hearing. I know Ireland are really frustrated and upset with that decision, and there may be more to come in that sense. But listen, I wouldn't be surprised if a card or, you know, even a couple of penalties in that high tackle area make a really big impact on this match or the other three.
Yeah, just while we're on the topic then, I know you guys didn't quite get a chance to discuss it yesterday due to the timing and the length as well of the hearing, but Ireland are awaiting a full report, obviously, before they launch an appeal. How frivolous would an appeal be, do you think, Murray? Is it kind of pointless, like a bit of a Hail Mary shot, or would there be any kind of legitimate chance of getting a ban reduced?
Well, Ireland definitely believe that there's mitigating factors that haven't been considered or even wrongly considered. You know, they feel that Bundiaki didn't have a clear line of sight on UJ's Sottini before the contact. They feel that he was almost going to actually gather the ball until the very last split second. Like they're kind of questioning whether, you know, the possession really changed hands quickly enough for Aki to be in a position to react and get lower. There's loads of little bits they'll pick out. The full report is to come, so they're waiting on that. From my point of view, in terms of Ireland just getting on with it, I would hope that they just, in a way, just move on. Unless there's a clear indication from their side that, okay, well, we can get a game or even two off, and potentially if we progress in the competition, that'll be a factor with Aki returning. But I hope they don't invest a lot of the energy and the mood around the group into that, because you remember last time, even with the Sean O'Brien one, there was just so much sunk into that, and it almost takes away the energy of the group and Joe Schmidt in particular, because he gets so worked up about these things when he could be using his brain power to tweak that last little power play or whatever it is. In a sense, I almost think, listen, 3 weeks is the going rate now. In the end, you're not surprised that he got 3 weeks or got a red card. That's what's happening in the game now. And if you're kind of investing all your energy in fighting that in the middle of a World Cup, it could be a losing battle. My sense would be that they should just go with it. Bundiaki, obviously, absolutely gutted, particularly in the match it was, and now to be denied knockout rugby with Ireland. But he's a massive team man, and he's already rode in, by all accounts, trained really well today. He's already trying to contribute to the mood and not be one of those guys who's sapping away that energy I spoke about. So yeah, it's hard to know exactly, but certainly the disciplinary hearing, they've completely backed the ref's call and they've reiterated all the points that he felt. So
yeah, sticking with the game before we move on to other matters very briefly, and we'll let you go in a couple more questions here from the group as to how Ireland might approach this Saturday's quarterfinals. So two questions that I think you can sort of answer in one, from Ian and Keane Highland. Ian was wondering your thoughts on a couple of the tight bench calls. So Cronin versus Scannell, Conway versus Larmer, and he says to a lesser extent, Ruddock versus Jordy Murphy. And then Keane Highland asks, what does the pod think the bench will look like this weekend? Let's presume Peter Romani and Kearney are the starters and it's a Henshaw Ringrose axis in midfield.
Yeah, I think Kilcoyne obviously is nailed in there, obviously, as the second loose head. And I thought he was good again against Samoa. I thought Porter was excellent again with his impact against the Samoans. And again, John Ryan's unlucky, but Porter just brings so much dynamism, doesn't he? He brings a jackal threat, carry, tackle. Personally, I probably would have Cronin in there for the ability to change up. And if you are chasing a little bit, to go after it that way. I would not be surprised though if it's Scannell again, because it's clear that he's the second choice hooker in Schmidt's eyes and he likes his set piece quality off the bench. So I probably see it edging that way. I almost think that he's going to go with Byrne and Klein again, and that Ruddock and Murphy both might miss out. Because coming off the bench in particular, I think Byrne is a back row in his eyes, and Byrne's a game-changing back row in his eyes as well. The Reece Ruddock thing is strange enough to me, to be honest. He doesn't really seem to... I don't think he seems to be a huge fan of him, really, because he didn't feature against Samoa, having played so well against Russia. And that was a surprise to all of us. It wasn't based on an injury. It was based on selection. So I think Klein did well off the bench against Samoa. And he's a really genuine heavy duty lock, and it, especially if you get an early injury in the second row, he may even come on earlier and burn still your back row option. So that's probably what I'm kind of expecting at the moment. Then McGrath, Carberry obviously are there to come on the halfbacks, and potentially Carberry somewhere else if you're looking to change the game up. And I probably think that Larmer has done enough there. Conway would be so unlucky, wouldn't he, to miss out. And you almost wonder about starting back three, even with his try-scoring form and his energy and Larmer's energy. But Earls and Stockdale and Kearney have been really locked on in a combination for a while. And Larmer is, yeah, it's a game-changing ability. That is just so useful off the bench. And again, if it is an early injury, he's shown that he's more than capable of being positionally sound and solid. So, yeah, that's probably what I'm thinking. Kilcoyne, Scannell, Porter. Yeah, I'd almost edge towards Klein, Byrne, and then those three backs that I mentioned there. It would be really interesting to hear what other people think, but that's probably what I'm thinking at the moment.
Yeah, keep the suggestions and predictions flowing in the WhatsApp group, and we'll see who's right at the end of the week. Quaylon asks, given that Ireland have conceded 7.5 points per game so far, do you think that, like last November, Ireland's defence will have to be the catalyst for another famous win over New Zealand?
Yeah, 100%. It's limiting. They will score tries, and obviously scoring points against them is key, but that is essential, is shutting them down, not only just to prevent the points, but to give them that suffocating feeling that they had in November in Dublin, where it just felt like times, you know, the Kiwis looked like they couldn't find an avenue, they couldn't find that solution that they usually do, they couldn't break it open, and that's that mental side of it is as important. It also adds to Ireland's mental side of it, of feeling in a dominant position when you're getting big shots on the likes of Brody Retallick and those ball carriers, and making Kieran Reid go backwards a little bit. It's huge. I'll be really interested to see how they actually set up with Kearney potentially coming back into fullback, whether they leave him isolated in the backfield as often as they tend to. They've kind of varied between that 13 and 2 with 2 in the backfield and just 1 at times in this World Cup, and obviously depending on different situations, whether they've kicked, whether they're expecting a kick back. But the New Zealand attacking kicking game is so intelligent that if they're not making those yards in their forward ball carriers or by going to the width, they're more than capable of kicking long or short, really. They've got a really good variety to that. Even Aaron Smith, obviously at 9, is really capable kicker, and he can actually put in those medium range kicks for wingers to chase. So there's all sorts of threats. And that backfield is going to be as important as what they do up front in making those dominant tackles. But Andy Farrell, to be fair to him, he's really got the All Blacks number, hasn't he? That was an interesting one, actually. I mentioned Ian Foster being a bit cranky, and one of the first questions was, what is it about Andy Farrell's defence that you struggle with? And he said, why don't you ask Andy Farrell about that? the Kiwi Journal went again with a different phrase, a question, and he said the same answer. Then, funnily enough, when he was asked about Ireland's attack later on, he said, oh, you know, it's a pity we don't have our defence coach here to answer that question. So he's been a bit of a hypocrite as well. But he has struggled to break it down, and Ireland's aggression has been a real defensive strength for them in these last couple of matches. I know New Zealand obviously scored quite a few points in Chicago as well themselves. Ireland had 40 that day, but again, there was some brilliant defence in that performance as well that's maybe overlooked because Ireland were so free scoring on that occasion, and it'll be huge again. I really do think that not only in terms of limiting the scoreboard, but just the emotional lift you get out of that, it's going to be huge.
Yeah, there's a question here from Marcus Kay about Japan's future after the World Cup. I tell you what, Marcus, we'll get to that tomorrow just because we're under a little bit of time pressure here. I just wanted to touch upon the World Rugby versus Scottish Rugby Union feud, Murray, that continues apace. I mean, talk about kicking a team while they're down. You touched upon it earlier with Aki. You kind of hoped that Ireland would nearly just leave it and move on. And I feel as though people might feel the same way about this one. But nonetheless, the Scots may be, accused essentially of bringing the game into disrepute.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are going to enjoy this saga. I think a lot of Ireland fans will. There's certainly a bit of venom in the Ireland-Scotland relationship at the moment. World Rugby had a press conference earlier on just to kind of launch the knockout stages, obviously to announce the referees and stuff. But you're kind of wondering, what are they going to tell us here? What's going to be new out of this? And they announced that they're bringing that misconduct charge essentially against the Scottish Rugby Union for their comments around the Typhoon Hagibis and its impact on that game between Japan and Scotland. Obviously, the Scots came out very strongly, very early, briefing heavily about how livid and how furious they were at this prospect. They did threaten to, I guess, take legal action. They said they were taking advice in that regard. It was a really strong position for them to take publicly, because behind closed doors, this stuff does go on, and there are frictions there, and there have been frictions there. Scotland, obviously, according to all reports and all reliable sources, they were vehemently opposed to the Nations Championship that World Rugby tried to get up and running, and they didn't want the prospect of relegation. So there's clearly a really poor relationship there between them and World Rugby. And yeah, it does add to them being in a really tricky position now. Even reading some of the stuff about Gregor Townsend and his future, you would I know people are kind of gloating at his comment about Ireland when they were potentially going to have a rearranged or cancelled match. But I think he's a good coach, and I think the way he's trying to make them play, it makes sense for the DNA of their rugby players as well. So you would hope they kind of stick by their man and hopefully improve from that. But yeah, it's a tricky one off the pitch. And you're kind of glad you're not involved in that kind of stuff, because it really looks nasty at the moment. And Ireland are looking forward to playing the All Blacks, but the Scots are going home with a load of stuff hanging over them.
Yeah, I know. I have real sympathy for them, I have to say. we'll let you go, Murray, and we'll catch you again for another pod tomorrow morning, our time, evening, your time. Have a good time in the meantime.
Brilliant. Looking forward to it.
And thank you to everybody at home, everybody in the WhatsApp group, and all of the 42 members that tune into these extra pods. Busy week ahead, exciting week ahead, and really looking forward to it. Until tomorrow, take it easy.
I don't think we've met before, but I'm the referee on this field.
If you're working as an accountant and you lose your job, nobody really notices.
Leinster could offer me $5 million a year, I wouldn't go.
It is Tommy Moore!
Rugby Weekly.
Little reverse pass, and